Welcome to another edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. Brought to you by our partners, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, FireTech, makers of on-scene soot and ash decon products, and Hennessy Distributing, your source for the new cool towel. We'll be back with today's show right after these important messages.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Make sure your family has a fire escape plan, and they practice it twice a year. One important thing to practice is get low and go. If you see or smell smoke, it's important to get low and go. Protect your family from fire. For more information, visit sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed: excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. If spring is here now, summer is right around the corner. Maybe you work in the hot sun day in and day out. How about standing in line at the amusement parks with the kids? Just how can you keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer: cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Open your cool towel pack, remove the towel, and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neckline like a kerchief. Wipe your face, your arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up a little? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times, and cool towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowelsonline.com or call 1-800-918-8323.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We have a very special episode for you today. We bring as our guest Ms. Cindy L. Cindy is the founder of the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, and she has a lot of very interesting information for all of us, and that will be coming along in a few moments. As you know, if you become a regular listener to Five Alarm Task Force, we begin each episode with a brief editorial entitled My View. If anybody wants to fight me in my very poor physical condition over the argument that first responders do not make up a family, I'll be ready to fight them any moment, and very importantly so. We are an amazing family of who we are. And just like any other family, we can have disagreements. We can have fights, and we can have even have a problem where we might walk out on one another for a short time. But when tempers cool and good thinking and reason comes back to play, we're right back there as a family. When I first started over 40 years ago in the fire service, and even though I was a neophyte, brand new rookie, as soon as I said to somebody I was a firefighter, or I showed them my badge, there was a change in their attitude, showing respect for me that I would do something like that, especially as a volunteer. But it makes no difference whether we're volunteers or career personnel, or which branch of first responders we're in, we are all a family. And one of the most important things that a family can do is to take care of each of the members as needed. You know, if you've ever received an email from me, from Dalmatian Productions, you probably saw in the signature the words, "Stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home." But are we really trying to stay safe? And do we really, really do our best on each and every call to make sure that everyone goes home? Or do we allow complacency to rule when we think we're responding to a quote-unquote routine call? I hope many of you know who Chief Billy Goldfeder is. He is probably one of the greatest mentors in the fire service that we've had for many, many years, thank goodness. And every month in Firehouse Magazine, he has a column called Close Calls. He also has his website, and he teaches all over the country. As a matter of fact, by the time you're listening to this, he's probably teaching at FDIC. And I can probably guarantee you that every single seat and every bit of standing space in his room will be taken up. Because Chief Billy tells us and teaches us very strongly that there is no such thing as a routine call anymore. We very rarely get that call for the little kitten lost up the tree. And when we do, and we don't pay attention, we find out the hard way that there are electrical lines pushing through the tree, branches on high. Or when we're coming home from again, routine call, trash fire maybe, garbage can, we don't see the driver who's not paying attention. They're looking at their phone for a text message, dialing a station on the radio, and they go right through the stop sign and hit our apparatus broadside. So, are we really going to make sure that everyone goes home? I think we need to change that line to make sure everyone goes home alive and well. But this is one thing we do have some control over. We have to pay attention to our surroundings, going to the call, at the call, returning from the call, getting back to the barn. We cannot take our lives for granted anymore. We don't have that luxury. You can go back and say, oh, well, the old guys are fighting in the 50s and 60s. Man, they had a whole lot of worse fires than we do. Yeah, they did. But they also didn't have the chemical makeup of the fires that we do. So when sometimes you find these guys who are still reluctant to put on an air pack and say, well, you know, my grandfather worked in there and he didn't have no air pack and he was fine. Sure, but he wasn't fighting the type of chemicals that you are fighting now. So let's pay a little bit more attention about taking care of each other. Not just when we're hurt, not just when we're injured, not when there's a loss in the family. Let's just remember every day to take care of one another and make sure, sincerely, that everyone goes home alive and well. And that's my view.
When you're done knocking down the flames, you want to hit the apparatus and head back to the barn, right? Wrong. If you do, you're carrying all types of poisons and carcinogens with you and spreading them wherever you go. But you can clean your gear and yourself before you even leave the scene with a Fireground Decon Kit from the folks at FireTech. This kit contains everything you need to properly and safely decontaminate yourself while still on the scene. This kit includes a pop-up pod for a private changing room, exclusive Fireground Decon hose designed to reduce contamination, all-natural decon towels, a special PPE cleaner formulated to remove stubborn hydrocarbons and that meets NFPA 1851 standard and more.
With a cancer rate among firefighters at 60% against only 20% among the general population, we can no longer ignore the dangers we can't see. For more information, visit their website at www.fireground-decon-store.com or call FireTech at 954-906-1118.
If fire broke out tonight while you were sleeping, would you and your family get out alive? Develop a home fire escape plan now and practice it regularly. And remember, if there's a fire, get out and stay out. It's your fire safe response. This message brought to you by this podcaster and your local fire department.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
And we're back, and we welcome you to a very special edition of Five Alarm Task Force. Today, our guest is Cindy L. with the Firefighter Cancer Foundation. And I think if you've listened to the last couple of shows that we've done, we featured a couple of weeks ago Bill Banks from FireTech. And it was Bill who brought us to the information that in the general U.S. population, approximately 20% of the population is touched by cancer. In the firefighter population of the United States, that percentage is 60%. Now, I took that with me to my oncologist, and I don't have a cancer, but I had an oncologist for a different reason. And I brought it to him, and he said, of that 20% in the general populace, he says, most of that is various forms of skin cancer. So it's not quite as serious as it appears. He says, but you're telling me firefighters have 60%. I can only imagine the carcinogens and the type of cancers that they're dealing with. Now, this is a gentleman who has devoted his life for the past 30 years to cancer research. And so once I heard that from Bill and from our good friend Terry Hennessy at Hennessy Distributing, who we did the show about the Cool Towel, I knew I had to speak with Cindy L. Cindy is busting her butt, figuratively and literally, to get this message out and to get the word of the Firefighter Cancer Foundation across America to firefighters and to the citizens of America as best and as fast as she can. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Steve. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Cindy, a little background here. She is the founder and president of the Firefighter Cancer Foundation. It was established in 2004. She has been investigating and studying occupational exposures and their responses for over 25 years. Her love of the fire service began as a child, whose didn't, with time spent shadowing an uncle who was the town engineer and fire chief in Bennington, Vermont. The love was rekindled by a volunteer fire service in Charles County, Maryland. And in 1988, she transitioned her career to fire service in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, as a firefighter paramedic, and John Hopkins Hospital as a founding critical care paramedic. She went on to become a labor leader and lobbyist, meet cancer firsthand, and turn a line of duty injury retirement into an opportunity to serve as a full-time first responder advocate. A diverse work, education, and personal health history fuels the cancer advocacy efforts to which she devotes her life and her time. And Cindy, let's go back with that. How did the foundation come about? What brought you to it?
So in 1988, I became a career firefighter, first with the Anne Arundel County Fire Department. And while going through fire academy training, there were tanks that were located on our academy grounds in Maryland that we were told were there but were not to be utilized for fire training or any other purposes. And I was a private investigator also before going into the fire service. So, you know, curiosity, I asked a couple questions quietly. And, you know, as a recruit, you know not to ask too many questions, obviously. Right. But I started hearing about this mystery oil that was delivered to the academy very shortly after it opened in 1969. And that mystery oil that was delivered for both live fire training and other training on premises turned out to be used transformer oil that was donated from the local electric company. Now, what was interesting, fast forward to my time in the field, not long after going out, I was offered the opportunity to increase my training and become a paramedic. And following completing paramedic training and national registry, fell into the opportunity of beginning work concurrently with Johns Hopkins and helping to start the critical care transport system in Maryland. That also allowed me, both on and off duty, to watch not only the cancer trends in Maryland, but also to be involved firsthand with the number of coworkers and folks that I was meeting through the fire service that were experiencing cancer firsthand. And as those trends were increasing, I saw them affecting 10 departments in Maryland. Again, in the back of my mind, I thought, how does this all tie together? What does it mean? And where is this coming from? And at that point, just kept watching, doing research and asking questions. What can we connect to the fire service with regards to the chemicals that we're exposed to? You know, what is real, what is scientifically based, and what is based through medicine, and what is not?
You know, it's interesting, excuse me one second, that you brought that up, because when Bill was here, we talked about the fact that for the general public, we believe that their first inkling that there could be a connection between illnesses that firefighters come down with from being on the job probably didn't break as a national issue until the tragedy of 9/11, when they
it didn't break it until 2006 within the fire service. And you're right, you're correct. Nationally, 9/11 put it on the front burner, but even then, they didn't look at the folks becoming sick as a result of 9/11.
Exactly. That's what we were discussing. We knew that guys and gals who were up on the mound digging through the rubble just within a few days after started coughing and bringing up different kinds of phlegm and stuff like that. And nobody attributed
without adequate equipment.
Right. Yeah. And the EPA was waving a flag that says, oh, the air here is fine. Everything's fine, folks. Don't worry about it. And meanwhile, within 6 months, we had dozens of people under heavy medical care or surgical care already.
Correct.
But that was the first time the public on national nightly news, the 6:30 newscast, started to see that, wait a second, these guys, I thought if they survived, they'd be okay. That's why they were up there. And that was the first time they saw this. But they didn't. It was just what I call the sprinkles on top of of an ice cream cone is what the public got. And it wasn't until, as you said, 5 years later that the big issue finally broke loose.
We were already looking. So over 10 years ago, the Boston Fire Department already had a trend averaging three firefighters a month being diagnosed with cancer. FDNY already had a trend that was increasing in cancer diagnoses pre 9/11. 9/11 propelled it to the national forefront, and even with that amount of recognition and scientific understanding and documentation, that's the important thing to understand. Things were documented that occurred during the World Trade Center period, both there and the Pentagon. There was air and medical monitoring that was done. And even with that level of recording, look at the fight that as an industry we have had to endure and the number of people that have and continue to die irregardless of what we know.
You know, look how long it took to get the measure passed again for funding in the legislature, which was, by the way, nonpartisan. This was a nonpartisan bill. Well, it was supposed to have been.
Correct.
Until somebody decided to add a little pork fat to it. But it still took well over a year to get the measure passed. And when you have guys who were active on the nozzle, climbing ladders, swinging the axes, and 90 days prior to, and now they're not doing that. You got to...
They're dead.
That's exactly. There's a big question mark. What the hell's going on?
Right. Well, that is because no one wants to hold the checkbook. No one wants to take responsibility. And while they realize that, yes, we have to have first responders and we have to have services, and the public demands that we have these services provided, no one is willing to pay for these services when you're looking at the other side, the ugly side, I call it, of what we do.
Very well said. The ugly side. Very much so. And, we see the same thing with the building industry about sprinklers, the kind of malarkey that they pass around at these meetings, that they're these ugly, who are on those ugly things hanging down 6 or 7 inches from your ceiling, you know. And we know for sure, we were lucky to have Chief Tim Travers from NFPA, the sprinkler initiative, on the show a few weeks ago also. Mm-hmm. And he said that the ones you have now look more like a button.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's probably
they're
doesn't...
They're as aesthetically pleasing as they can be made and highly invisible at this point.
Exactly.
Unless you're really looking for them. And like sprinklers, we know sprinklers save lives, and so do first responders. And yet there are forces that be that, again, devalue the role and the importance of having these these services available. In Maryland, we lost over 250 firefighters to cancer, and those numbers are still growing. We had a number of fire instructors from our period that had children that were affected by not only common but rare cancers. Yeah. Not a coincidence. And we had wives of folks from this group where they took the clothing home, and the wives and the partners at home doing the laundry also were diagnosed with a rare form of breast cancer. Again, consistent with the types of carcinogens that our folks were exposed to. So, following my retirement from service in the department, I spent 3 years cataloging evidence and going through discovery to truly learn what were the facts and what did we know of what our folks were exposed to during that time period. Just with that specific group of chemicals, not only the used transformer oil, but also the rest of the products of combustion and products of firefighting, and how they affect our bodies, both on a cellular level, and then how they affect specific organs, and how those actually translate into specific cancers, and how the body breaks down.
Sure. Well, I'm just, the show that will be on, comes on tonight, it's just a little peek behind the curtain at our company, Dalmatian Productions. But my partner and best friend and I were talking about this very item in the show, a small part of it. And we talked about, you know, back then, we were both started in the 70s, late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we didn't wear gloves except if we were picking up a deceased burn victim.
Sure.
Okay, that's when we put on gloves. But we didn't put on gloves for handling somebody throwing up. We didn't put on gloves for somebody bleeding badly or anything like that. Never thought of it. We carried our gear. Most of those of us who were volunteers and lived close to the station as I did, we basically just kept our bunker gear in our car, either in the back seat or the trunk, and then eventually brought it home. And now we actually have a spot, a partner spot, as I'm calling them, that's going to be on with this show that we've already done for Bill and FireTech, because with their efforts and their technology and the people they're partnering with are now finding ways that allow the firefighters to decontaminate themselves on scene before they even get back on the apparatus, because once they do that, it starts a domino fall. Mm-hmm. The domino hits, you bring them back on the apparatus. Now the apparatus is contagious, so to speak. You bring it back to the firehouse the way it is. Now the firehouse, you tread it along with your boots and your shoes. Now you're spreading it around there. Right. Go get a drink of water from the cooler. You spread it around there. Mm-hmm. And so we need to stop this at the source. We know that there's very little chance that we can stop the manufacture of furniture, drapery, bed coverings, whatever, dolls, with articles that that we know are known carcinogens, but they have to only, they're only dangerous or deemed dangerous when they burn. Well, guess what?
Right.
We're the guys who go in there when they burn, when it's dangerous.
Correct.
And so we have to do the best, like what Bill's doing and with your efforts. And that's why we wanted you here today, because we need to get your word, your devotion, your research information out to the public to know that there is a constant threat. Every single call that you are going to come in contact with some type of carcinogen or off-gassing mm-hmm. product that's going to affect you and then those in your domino line.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're here for today. So we're going to come back and talk with Cindy in a couple of moments. We're going to talk about resources and programming from the Firefighters Cancer Foundation. But we're going to take a few moments and we'll be right back. Are you a hoarder? There is a difference between poor housekeeping and what is considered a dangerous amount of clutter. Take a look at your surroundings. Is your home a fire risk? Could rescuers reach you in the event of an emergency? We know that hoarding fires are harder to fight. Firefighters must often climb over clutter or wade through items to find an ignition source. Searches really cannot be done in the traditional way. Firefighters may have a tough time getting inside due to blocked doors, but also may have a hard time getting someone out who is trapped inside. In extreme hoarding cases, windows and doors might be completely blocked. All that stuff provides a greater fuel load, which will burn hotter and faster. Remember, there is a difference between being a collector or being a hoarder. It's a great time to evaluate your situation and start on that spring cleaning today.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Protect your family from fire. Make sure your home has smoke alarms in every bedroom, outside your sleeping areas, and on every level of your home, even your basement. For games and activities, go to sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
So five tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back with our special guest today, Cindy L. from the Firefighter Cancer Foundation. And in our first segment, Cindy really told us not only about the foundation, but the education she received by learning what she and other firefighters were being exposed to. That was, let's say, the little nugget that got planted, fell off the tree, and has now sprouted to create another big tree. And she is now at the head of this tree trying to get this message. Not just the message, though. What Cindy is really working toward that made me want, one of the reasons why I wanted her to be a guest is she's not just carrying the message out. She wants to see a resolution of the problems for those who are sick because of the message. And that's different than just being a town crier. Anybody can be a town crier. But she's putting the time and effort that's necessary to get the medical field invested in this problem to know that there can be a big difference between just people knowing about it and doing something about it. So that brings us in our second segment now to talk with Cindy about the resources and programming that the Firefighter Cancer Foundation is offering and can bring to your department, your community, your commissioners, whoever needs to hear it. She can help you with that. So Cindy, why don't you tell us a little about the resources that the foundation brings?
Thank you, Steve. So through our experiences, we identified, and it was at the recommendation of other national charities like the Lance Armstrong Foundation, esteemed cancer centers like MD Anderson, Dana-Farber,
sure,
Duke, and others that we consulted in our early days as to how do we best help our people. And so we focused on, at their recommendation, the program resources. So early on, we built a solid program that continues to grow literally every month with added resources to help folks actually truly navigate their cancer and the cancer experience, not only as an individual, but also as a family. We look at this as an event that affects the entire family, irregardless of whether it's the responder diagnosed with cancer, the offspring, the wife, the mother, the brother, the sister. It affects our unit, how we function mentally, physically, financially. So we have a comprehensive program that addresses all that. We start with a needs assessment phone call. And I want to preface all this first by the fact that we are a nonprofit 501c3. Myself, the other members on our board, we do not receive any pay for the work that we do. And we do all this as a labor of love, and through dedication and passion to those that we serve and care about. And so in starting with a needs assessment phone call, we're able to identify in under an hour what the family needs as a unit, both to access appropriate medical care, whether it's the responder getting to the right medical treatment for their cancer and for what they've been exposed to and how they've changed their body as a first responder. One of the things that is being overlooked right now within the medical community is that we change our DNA every time we have an immune response to the chemicals that we're exposed to on a fire by walking into a firehouse and breathing in diesel exhaust or being around solvents or being in a building that has mold. We're changing our body. Our body's responding.
Right.
And this is something that's very different from the general public. And this is why these occupational diseases need to be treated differently from the public when they're diagnosed with a cancer.
You know, you mentioned...
So we start with that. Go ahead.
Interrupt for a moment, please. You mentioned the concept of breathing the diesel when we walk into the back into the firehouse. And mm-hmm. Once that really came out, the industry jumped on that very quickly. And we see the ads at firehouse and fire engineering. There are several companies out there that have the hoses out there and attach mm-hmm. their automatic breakaway, so that nobody has to go and release the hook. They just the apparatus can pull out, and that's safe. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, well, if the industry accepted that the diesel fumes in the
cause of cancer,
right? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, was bad for us, and they jumped on and say, let's do something to fix it right away. Why have they been so resistant with, you know? I'm not asking you the question. I'm asking it, you know, just as
rhetorically.
Rhetorically, is that why, if they've reacted so well and so positively in that first circumstance, why aren't they doing the same thing again with these other more recent discoveries that we have? We know it's always been bad for us to inhale the smoke when we're fighting a fire. You know, last night, Rich and I were talking about the fact that one of the first fires we fought together was in a Volkswagen Beetle, the original Beetle, and
yes,
we were pouring water on it, and then it changed direction. The wind changed direction, but we hadn't been mm-hmm. taught to mask up for a car fire yet. And we took a snootful of it, and we were both coughing and gagging and everything like that. And the chief said, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. boys, but okay, but you guys will be now the example from now on. Any vehicle fire, we're going to scot up before we approach. Okay, so we're glad. But the fact is, that's something else that it's easy to recognize. So if we're not supposed to breathe that smoke in, and we're not supposed to breathe in the diesel, and they fixed worked with both of those. Why is the industry still so reluctant to take it to the next level? That's the rhetorical question.
Money, change, and responsibility.
Well, the top three that firefighters do not like.
Correct.
Especially number one being change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And who is going to pay for it and who's going to take responsibility for it? Those are the three things that are driving every single aspect, unfortunately, of what we're battling here. And this is why the resources that we bring and that we tangibly bring are so important. We literally help folks get to the right treatment in a timely method. We help them with their transport if needed, with, again, the reading and understanding of what their diagnosis actually means. And we have actual medical teams that follow the folks that we assist. We have geneticists. We have a variety of medical and nursing experts, exercise physiologists, and nutritional experts that we work with, that we bring to our community so that, again, we can now take the patient and help the patient and the family become the best advocates for themselves that they can be. And we continue to be there for them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without pay, again, as a labor of love, because this is what we do to take care of our own.
Right.
And this is unique from any of the other organizations currently out. We do have our programming actually reviewed by the American Cancer Society, and we work hand in hand with them to make sure, again, that all of the work that we're doing is appropriate, both scientifically and medically. We're also pushing the envelope when it comes to the research into how do we solve the issues of the industry. And we'll talk more of that a little bit later. I'm looking forward to that as well. But in the meantime, we're working on further tangibles, like how do you deal with the workers' compensation side of trying to keep your job, keep your benefits, keep a roof over yourself and your family? We get involved with all that, again, by bringing more experts to the table that can help to make that happen in real time.
Mm-hmm.
We're teaching departments also community outreach and how to build community-based programming to actually fund the things that they need. So how do we build those relationships with our local hospitals, local corporations, with the Rotary, with the Chamber of Commerce? You know, these are all great organizations and avenues that have benevolent sides that want to be involved. They want to support their first responders, but they don't know how. We're teaching departments and associations and state groups how to access those avenues that are less thought of, both for relationships in moving that programming forward, making it more community-based, but also getting it funded. So these are all areas that are unique to what we're doing, way beyond what many others have chosen to tackle so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at basically what are the tangible needs in real time for the members that we're serving, and if we don't have that, we find it or we create it through partner programming.
Well, I think that's going to be the key, that with what you said, the fact that you can have medical people in the community, you can have people to help them with their diet and all these others, that's simply showing that that there is a way to help these people and to help the not just these people. We got to talk about it as not just the ones who are sick right now. We have to look at it as the industry. We are,
mm-hmm.
We have chosen to take an oath that says we will protect and save the property and lives of the people in our fire district. That's what we do. We don't say, if you do this and if you do that, if you can avoid me breathing diesel fumes, or if you can promise me you won't let me be exposed to off-gassing petroleum products. We just say we're going to do it, and that's because that's our dedication. That's who we. Whether you're a career, whether you're volunteer, you're paid on call, it makes no difference. We all take the same oath. We're going to protect and serve the people in our community, and so.
And the toxins and the exposures are the same. It doesn't matter whether you're getting a paycheck or not.
Exactly.
For serving your community, it is the same carcinogens. It's the same toxins. It's the same cancers. And we're having to learn creatively now, how do we help science to further identify the trends, the cohorts, the groups that are getting sick, because they don't currently meet what they're used to using for protocols, for methods of tracking. So now we have to look at hours of exposure versus days or shifts of exposure. You know, we're having to create a whole new system and tracking method and a whole form of education, understanding, and awareness that we've never had to approach at this level before.
Sure, sure. But hopefully we're in an age where, since we have to do that, maybe we've also are starting to or have begun to develop certain products that can help us with the measurements. In other words,
that's the exciting positive part. Yes, the
right.
Technology actually is there. It is coming. And our organization is working to bring those innovations to this industry on a daily basis. And yes, we're excited to have lots of positive to bring to this community.
And I think that that's what's going to help in the long run to let the foundation, to use a bad pun, but catch fire in the communities, because they're going to mm-hmm. see that it's not just, oh, we're here, we're so sorry to hear about your illness, but if you need anything, call this 800 number, somebody will answer it, and you can talk to them. No, you're coming in, you need this, we'll get that person here by Wednesday. You need this, we're going to have them there on Thursday. You need this, we'll have them there on Tuesday for that, because that's more important than either of the other two. And we want you and your family to be together that day. And once the public sees all of that coordinated effort, not singular, one person waving one banner, but you see all these professionals who are giving of themselves to treat the people who give of themselves. As I've always said, when there was that large debate between a professional is only a career firefighter, not a volunteer firefighter, I've always said, hey, when the devil wants to dance, he doesn't care if you get a check or not. He's going to pull
That's
you
correct.
In. He's going to pull you into the circle, and you're going to dance one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with the diseases that we're exposed to. Doesn't make any difference if you only go on 40 calls a year. You don't know what was in that barn that, you know, at Farmer Jones's place. What if it was full of fertilizer and that fertilizer went up? Okay, was burning royal hot when you were in that barn trying to wet it down and ease it down. You don't know what you're exposed to. Yeah, you were wearing your mask, but what's all over your bunker gear now? Did you ever think of washing
Correct.
It off? You know, washing it off. Why would I wash it off for? Okay.
And this goes back to teaching personal responsibility, that if you're going to choose to give of yourself in this industry, now we need to create a whole new genre of understanding of if you're going to choose to give of yourself, and while it is greatly appreciated, there needs to also be a level of personal responsibility that you will track and you will be aware and you will be responsible also for a better understanding of what you're exposed to and ways that you can reduce those exposures and improve the outcome of your health and your longevity. And that is part of what we're teaching both nationally and internationally now with the program that we are bringing to the table.
I think that's very important. And again, the more we can get the concept out to the public for them to see the whole picture and not just concentrate on one or two dots is going to give the foundation and those that work with the foundation a lot more strength to work with and to carry with them to show and display when they come and make a presentation in a community. Let me ask this before we take this break. Does there have to be an illness to bring the foundation out, would you go out to any community that says, listen, we need a symposium for you to tell us about what our firefighters are facing when they go into these buildings? We've heard this and we've seen that in the newspaper, but we want to really hear it from the people who know better. Will the foundation go out and send people there just for the point of education?
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
And we actually already have a monthly calendar where we have folks not only in the U.S., but in other countries that actually are going out.
Excellent.
And are offering preventative and awareness presentations so that we can, again, reduce the toxins that we're exposed to in our lives and help folks gain a better understanding of ways to lead a healthier lifestyle do it affordably, have access to better means of remaining healthy, regardless of whether you're a member of the fire service or not. So we are actively teaching that and working with communities literally worldwide with that programming. And in the future, we're expanding that into other means of technology, such as webinars and videos as well, so that folks can access this information electronically too.
Well, that'll be great. Well, I can see that having a tremendous effect on communities to know that they can jump in ahead of the need, possibly, and be prepared so that in the event, God forbid, one of their own firefighters or paramedics comes down with an illness that is deemed job-related, they already will have a mechanism to get the ball rolling right away instead of waiting and going through 10 days of meetings and we have to wait for a vote and Joe was gone away on vacation for the vote. So we have to postpone it another month. We hope you don't mind. But if you can get that community on board from the get-go so that they're prepared that, again, God forbid, something would happen in their community, they're ready to at least get the first stages rolling on their own and know that luckily the Firefighter Cancer Foundation is going to be there coming in, riding in on the horses to bring the rest of that, of what's needed. And I think that's going to be one of the greatest messages you're going to be able to get to communities to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, we purposely design our programming so that it actually fits any group and any aspect of general public that is accessing. Is it focused toward the fire service? Yes, it is, because of the nature of the exposures and the rate at which our folks are being diagnosed. But we also continue to enhance and bring programming that is great for anyone in the public sector or any community, really anywhere, as well as information through our website that can help anyone to better navigate their cancer experience.
That's terrific. And we're going to, by the way, before the show ends, we're going to give you all the contact information you may desire so you can get in touch with Cindy and the folks at the Firefighter Cancer Foundation. We're going to come back with our third segment, and this is the one that Cindy was mentioning earlier. She's very excited to give. She's going to be talking to us about the innovations and research, what they are and how they're paying off as the foundation continues to do this great work. We'll be back with our special guest, Cindy L., as we talk about the Firefighter Cancer Foundation right after these few words.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
When you're done knocking down the flames, you want to hit the apparatus and head back to the barn, right? Wrong. If you do, you're carrying all types of poisons and carcinogens with you and spreading them wherever you go. But you can clean your gear and yourself before you even leave the scene with a Fireground Decon Kit from the folks at FireTech. This kit contains everything you need to properly and safely decontaminate yourself while still on the scene. This kit includes a pop-up pod for a private changing room, exclusive Fireground Decon hose designed to reduce contamination, all-natural Decon towels, a special PPE cleaner formulated to remove stubborn hydrocarbons and that meets NFPA 1851 standard and more. With a cancer rate among firefighters at 60% against only 20% among the general population, we can no longer ignore the dangers we can't see. For more information, visit their website at www.fireground-deconstore.com or call FireTech at 954-906-1118. And we are back with our third segment on Five Alarm Task Force. This special episode is with our guest, Cindy L. of the Firefighter Cancer Foundation. And Cindy has really been a great educator for us about what, as firefighters, but not just firefighters, are facing due to the jobs that we do, which means going into where places are burning, and we really don't know what's burning inside most of the time, but all that stuff is getting all over us, our bunker gear, sometimes our skin, our face a little bit, depending on your hood and your mask, etc. But what's really great about this foundation, I'm learning, is that they don't limit themselves just to the fire service. And you don't have to have an existing need to have somebody come out from the foundation and talk with you. And I'm going to give this, just this is just the first time I want to give it, but I want you to know that if you need to call or you're interested in speaking with Cindy and the people at the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, you can call them toll free at 866-411-3323. I'm hoping my new glasses are working, right? 3323, that was correct?
That is correct. As okay. I like to say, we have the 411 on cancer.
Okay. And their website is www.ff, as in Frank, or firefighter, ffcancer.org. Again, I'm going to tell you that, www.ffcancer.org. And we'll remind you about all that information when we get to the end of the show. So Cindy now, in this portion, she's going to talk to us about the innovations and research that the foundation is bringing to the fight. Not just the fight, but to the educational part of what their job is and to the fight as they help the families who have been stricken with various forms of cancer. It's all yours.
So I'll break this down, thank you, in a couple different shorter segments for you. So. And again, reminding folks, we are a nonprofit 501c3 doing this work. So none of us are deriving any financial gain from the work that we do. We do this as a labor of love and passion for the people that we care about and the communities that we serve. And we're driven by the fact that our firefighters and our first responders are dying at extraordinary numbers now from occupational disease. And so in looking at that as the crux of the issue, we looked at the human side of this first. And so going back to what is cancer, how is cancer defined, what triggers it, how do we detect it early, and then how do we treat it? So for the human side, we've actually developed various internal research teams. We have a medical team that is currently working not only in the state of Maryland and is right by NIH, and the CDC office is there, but there is also a research and development center in India, and these folks are working globally to bring new technology into the United States that can not only treat advanced systemic cancer without side effects, but also identify cardiac issues ahead of your having the heart attack or having the blockage occur, and other technology that can deliver targeted drug therapy, create new cell growth, new tissue growth, and treat a variety of medical issues, not just cancer. So the NIH is currently meeting on a regular basis with our medical experts that include geneticists and tech folks and scientists on a global platform to bring that technology to the United States, run the trials, again, go through the appropriate processes under the FDA, et cetera, to determine how can we better keep our people healthy and treated aggressively, safely, and make a difference in the quality of life that our folks are enduring. And again, this is everyone. This is not just first responders. This will affect you, your neighbors, your family, the public. So far-reaching effects with the work that we're doing on the medical scene and what these technologies can offer. We're also looking at an early detection process that includes blood, urinalysis, and also canines. We've just opened the first U.S. laboratory that is actually utilizing rescued hounds for the purpose of identifying folks that have active disease. And that's any active disease as early as stage zero. We're also finding cancers in firefighters as a result of this research. We've just entered phase two. Our phase one, we identified the process of having folks breathe into a surgical mask. The hounds can actually identify if a disease is present or not.
Wow.
But we've enhanced it a step further. We're using Rhodesian Ridgebacks, and these are a phenomenal hunting class dog from South Africa that hunt lions, to use their instinctive prowess to determine in real time where on the human body a disease is active.
That's amazing.
So we're actually doing live real-time screenings, and these canines are hitting on actual disease that is active in the body. So now we can tell you, not only do you have something changing in your body and you need to go see a physician, and we'll give you appropriate medical recommendations for how to test for this, covered by your insurance from non-invasive to invasive, how to find the disease, detect the disease, and then also get the disease treated. And yes, we are finding cancer at stage zero doing this.
That's amazing. It really is. To think that you can do this at such an early, early point in the onset of a disease, and not just the one disease.
Correct.
It's going to...
So again, far-reaching effects in a positive way. We're using canines to not only save humans, but our team is also hitting on other canines with cancer. The first paper coming out is anticipated to be May on this research that is being backed by Cornell University and Cornell Veterinary School, as well as Rutgers Veterinary College. And our canine behaviorist is an adjunct professor at both institutions. She is highly esteemed in the canine behavior world and also brings over 25 years of experience to canine research, canine assistance dogs, and all the amazing work that she is doing with United Canine Professionals and Merlin's Kids. They've had tremendous public following. And a book has actually just come out documenting some of the work that she and I are doing together. It's being produced by National Geographic, and it's called Loyal. And it references the service dog work and the canine medical research that we're doing together. So we are very excited, again, to be able to move things to the next level, not only to help canines, but also save humans at the same time with this area of work.
Wow, I can't even get my dog to bring me the newspaper in the morning. But
well, this is where Janice Wolf's team and her behaviors can actually work with your canine to learn how to bring you the newspaper in the morning.
You know what I think is amazing this could do is that if parents could take a young child and go to where the canine team is going to be, and you could detect possibly at, you said, stage zero, possibly a disease that often hits children at a young age, let's say, God forbid, muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis. So, and if that dog just gives that sign that there's something there, and where they can, and they point, let's say they stop pawing gently at the lungs, the chest, or something like that, to the dream of giving those, although it's tough news for the parents to get, but at that same moment, that can be tempered by the fact that right there they're going to know what to do to work with their child, with the whole team behind the dog program,
correct,
and to help
correct.
Keep it as at the least possible level as science will allow because they found it early?
We're actually shortening the diagnostic process of trying to locate where a disease is active in the body. And this is huge because if you ask anyone that has been through any diagnostic process, the waiting is the worst part. I just want answers. I just want to be able to formulate a plan. If I can feel like I have control over where my life is going and what is happening to me, and that the disease is not controlling me, but I can feel like I'm taking control of it, that is three-fourths of the mental battle that goes with any of these challenges any of us face when you're dealing with an illness.
And the emotion.
So, correct.
The kick in the gut.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And we've also added the mental health component to this. We're actually writing the first cancer and mental health programming right now for the fire service with a number of our fire service mental health experts, and that will be coming out very shortly. We currently have stress first aid that's prevalent in our industry and encouraging folks to access that because we know that post-traumatic stress runs very high in our industry. We'll then add the extreme stress of a cancer diagnosis or a significant occupational disease. And we're seeing those symptoms magnified at both time of diagnosis, but we're also seeing them at stage four, when the body is letting down. And we don't understand yet chemically what is happening within the brain during stage four, but we are driving research so that we can learn and better, again, project the resources that will be needed and better prepare our families and better prepare the patient for when they're at that stage. How can we give you everything that you need so that you can live with dignity and so that you can have quality of life, irregardless of where you are in that disease process?
Absolutely amazing.
So this
amazing.
Is where our work is so unique in the difference it can make.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm, when you were just saying that last part, it popped into my mind. All too often in our journals, both online and printed, we're reading too often of firefighter depression and firefighter suicide.
And suicide,
right?
As a result.
Suicide. And
absolutely.
And it's not unnecessarily post-traumatic stress disorder, but it is a problem that that we face. And I was just thinking that imagine if somebody drops the dime, as they say, to the foundation and say, look, you know, we have this guy, a really nice guy at the firehouse, but he's not.
Behavior has changed.
Yeah, something's changed. And, you know, can you guys maybe do anything with the dog and maybe bring him out and just let the dog, you know, make him feel good? Because we know that they're doing that with our soldiers now, which is changing
so
their lives.
So we can take it a step further. Through our behavior partner, she's actually placing cortisol dogs. These are dogs trained to hit on heightened levels of cortisol in the body with children at schools right now.
All right, hold on. Let's tell the listeners what cortisol is, because not everybody may know it like you and I
sure.
do, and how it affects us.
Sure. So when you become either stressed or your adrenaline kicks in, one of the chemicals that is emitted into the body is a chemical called cortisol. It's like a steroid. And while it has positive effects, it also has very negative effects on the body. It speeds up the heart. It speeds up your breathing. It raises your blood pressure. It increases your inflammation. So now your body is in an unhealthy state because this chemical is literally raging through your body. And the problem is, if your body is already challenged in other areas, if you're already fighting other diseases, or if your organs or your systems aren't already working properly, now your body's lost the checks and balances of how it would normally get rid of it and how it would deal with it. So it continues to grow and fester until you have an extreme episode like rage, or you do damage to yourself, or you do damage to someone else, as in a violent episode. These canines can detect in real time when the human body is reaching those levels of high cortisol. So when that body's approaching that scary stage of I'm impending a violent episode, whether it's meant to harm myself or someone else, the dogs can literally detect it. They can actually give you the cue that it is happening, and they can help diffuse it. They will literally go to the person and help the person to calm down through how they function as a canine. And humans are trained also to interface with the dog in that situation to also help deal with that situation so that the person doesn't have the rage.
That's wonderful. That's going to be such a benefit to the fire service. Excuse me. Once the foundation gets to grow to that level that they have multiple teams that can go out there, I think that's going to definitely save lives of our brothers and sisters in the fire service who are facing whatever pressures that they are.
So through our canine behaviorist, Janice Wolf, and through her work with Merlin's kids, Rutgers University is presently running a trial with these canines with a group of veterans so that they can document folks that are at the highest levels of post-traumatic stress and at the highest levels of these bad chemicals that are raging through the body, and how can they now interface that with the canines, detect it when it's building, stop it from becoming extreme, and now helping those folks to lead more normal, again, productive lives.
Can't have anything better than that. That's for sure.
No.
That's for sure.
No, man and dog, man, woman and dog, actually, yes.
Right.
So.
And all these.
The next.
I'm sorry, go ahead, dear. No, go ahead.
I was going to say so that leads us into the follow-up and part of what we're doing. You know, it goes back then next, okay, we've identified there's an issue with the human body, with the canines, what do? Now we have to get folks to the appropriate medical experts, and this would be experts in a variety of arenas that we tap as an organization, and we cut through the red tape, and this is another process that we've been unique in developing. Cutting down that diagnostic period, but also going to the experts in these areas. We have folks that are actually monitoring the medical technology corridor, as well as what's happening in what would be considered the more experimental or integrative areas of blood, urinalysis, and early detection. We have folks that specialize in research and development, not only for the fire service, but other industries, working with our advisors and our teams to, again, identify, you know, where are these new technologies coming from? How can we bring them to the fire service and our families, make them accessible, and make them affordable? And that also goes in working with the insurance companies and the fire departments themselves. So, again, we hub it all under one ginormous umbrella, if you will.
Right.
But it does all interconnect. And this is where the use of these experts, we have the go-tos for all these different aspects of industry.
Right. Let me ask you this. What kind of reception have you received from insurance companies? Has there been anything positive coming from their side?
There is. We've actually been able to work with insurance companies on the state level to show where having a good wellness program will reduce line of duty injuries by over 60%. You have an immediate cost savings of not only keeping personnel healthy, but keeping them working.
Right.
And that is the goal. There is such a huge expenditure, over $150,000 to train a first level firefighter or firefighter paramedic to come into this industry. It's a financial investment that the taxpayers pay for, whether they realize it or not.
Sure.
You know, this is a community-based bill that people don't realize they are already paying for. So how do we keep our folks healthy and actively working in their communities? And again, it doesn't matter whether you're getting a paycheck or not. There is still a process and there's still a payment that is needed to fund these people and fund these programs and fund their equipment.
Sure.
If our people are sick and are injured, then you have holes there in the services that the communities need and require. So again, by keeping our folks healthy through early detection, early diagnosis, and more appropriate treatments for what they're experiencing, the insurance companies are finally starting to see that, yes, it is a cost savings to them to be more proactive. We have companies now that are offering cancer policies, that are offering injury policies, so the responders themselves can help offset some of that cost, as well as the communities and the jurisdictions. So you are seeing that playing field change. Is it changing fast enough? No. But it's something that, yes, we are making positive progress in. We have had meetings with a number of the insurance companies across the nation, and we've been able to make changes on a regional level within state systems where we've taught them how to educate and work with their insurance carriers, again, both to keep their folks healthy on the front end and also create cost savings on both the front and the back end.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, the very fact that you've had positive response from the insurance companies opens up a whole new set of pathways, because for the most part, the American public, all they hear is the negative side, that the insurance company won't pay for this and they won't pay for that. And they're also not privy most of the time to a lot of the cases. And the fact that you've had some good positive response by the municipal insurance companies, those ones who take care of the workers' comp on these cases, is a great stride that's been taken. That has probably, your success is probably on the backs of hundreds of thousands who came before trying to get care for municipal workers who are injured on the job, whether they're the refuse collection or the firefighter, it's the paramedic or the mayor's secretary. People get injured, and that's just life. And if you can get these insurance companies to come in and say, okay, well, let's partner up, we'll review it with you and let's see what we can do, I think is a major, major breakthrough that you have accomplished towards health. And that, of course, immediately goes to the concept of being able to help and assist the people in the community where you're working. And I love the thing with the dogs. I think that's absolutely wonderful. I think, yes, it's useful in New York City to catch the bed bugs, the adorable beetle.
Yes.
I think dogs play an intimate role in human lives. There's a kindred spirit that we find when we have the right dog or cat partner for us.
Sure.
And the fact that we've seen it with our veterans, there have been many news stories about a veteran who was given a dog. There was a beautiful story just a couple of weeks ago of a veteran who was separated from his dog who he thought had died overseas.
Yeah.
And they were reunited, and the dog got a hip replacement and whatever, but they're back together again. And this guy came out of this horrible funk that he was in because he's back with his dog again. And I think,
well, what's exciting is we're not just repurposing dogs that would otherwise be euthanized and giving them a second chance at life.
Exactly.
But we can also save other canines, where we can detect cancer in other canines. So now our accelerant dogs and our dogs of service that are dying 4 to 5 years on average ahead of the normal canine schedule for passing away, now we could potentially detect disease earlier in those canines and get them treated and make changes to their lifestyle.
Well,
so
that part,
again, they're not dying as early as they are.
That strikes a chord with our family, because we lost our second dog, Remy, to canine leukemia before she was even 2 years old. She was an adopter, because we rescue dogs and cats. We don't buy them any place. We only do rescues. And, when the doctor gave us the diagnosis, we just thought she was lethargic. She needed a better food, but it wasn't. It was canine leukemia. And so I think that, as you just said, you can actually use dogs to help cure dogs, doggy doctors, so to speak, for other canines. I think that's a great concept to think of. And I think all of that comes under this wonderful umbrella that you're offering through the services of the firefighter. I was going to say the canine fund, the firefighters, cancer foundation, who uses great canines to help with them. And let me tell you again, folks, before we get to the end of the show, as Cindy has said, the foundation is a 501c3. That means any financial donation to them could be considered a charitable donation on your income taxes, and you need to speak with your tax specialist to know for sure if it's going to help you. But keep the record. That's the most important thing. Don't just chuck it away. It might be very worthwhile to you. And if you want to send them a little token to say thank you for the work you do and here's what I can do to help, you send it to the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, Inc., meaning INC, Incorporated, not Inc., like on the paper, at P.O. Box 1640. And that's going to be in DeLand, D as in Delta, E-L-A-N-D, DeLand, Florida. And the zip is 32721-1640. And I know that because I did mail specialist. So if you want the zip plus four, it's going to be, the zip is 32721-1640. And you have brochures, right, that we can send out to people, correct?
Absolutely. We have a variety of pamphlets and media folk media information that we can send out on a variety of topics.
Right.
Regardless of what level of understanding or need is. Absolutely,
right.
Yes.
And remember,
we also have a PayPal button on our website.
Oh, that's great.
www.ffcancer.org.
Okay, so I'm going to make a note of that. So they have a PayPal there. So if you have a PayPal account, all you have to do is go there, go onto the website at ffcancer.org, and you can hit the PayPal button, make a contribution, and you can get your receipt from PayPal. Just don't think because it's a cyber transaction, well, I can't have a receipt for it and track it from my income taxes. Yes, you can. You can print that out, and you keep that with the paperwork you're going to give to your tax specialist when the time comes. Cindy, I can't thank you enough for spending the time and really educating not only our listeners, but educating me as a past firefighter who just knew there were dangers out there. And I've been on a real kick with our own health issues as firefighters, that we're not taking enough care of ourselves. We don't have the time. We don't want to put the time towards it. But this in itself is a whole new level of awareness that we have to be at, and that you and the foundation are working so hard to serve, not just, as you said, not just serving the male and female firefighters, paramedics in the community, but anyone in the community who needs this type of aid, of assistance, of knowledge. You'll be able to find it and contact them and see where you stand. You can call them again at toll free at 866-411-3323. And their foundation, their online presence is at www.ffcancer.org. And you can find out from there. And there'll be people there who can also get back to you if you need to ask a question, right?
Yes, Steve, our toll-free number hits no less than 33 phones, regardless of where in the country that call is coming from.
Okay.
I know we didn't get a chance to get into some of the other tech innovations regarding decontamination and toxins today. It's a pretty big topic.
Well, maybe we'll bring you back.
We are loading a lot of new free downloads on the website. And, yes, I'm hoping we can chat again further about the ways that we're teaching not only first responders to reduce the amount of chemicals that we're putting in and on our bodies and all the great resources available in that arena, but also for the general public on ways they can keep their families healthier and reduce those things that can cause cancer and other disease down the road.
Exactly. So
I can't thank you enough for, again, having this platform, and I look forward to speaking more in the future with you on all of that.
I will look forward to it. And we just want to, again, give our thanks to Cindy L. with the Firefighter Cancer Foundation. All the information she's brought to us today. If you have any questions that we glossed over, we didn't get the information, drop us a line, an email to dalmatprod, dalmatprod, at outlook.com. And we'll make sure that the message gets to Cindy and her people. Again, our thanks to Cindy for taking the time out. She is very, very busy. She hits the road tomorrow running eventually winding up next week in Indianapolis at the big FDIC, the firefighting conference in Indianapolis every year in April. And so we wish her safe journeys
Thank you, Steve.
Spreading much more positive information about everything that the foundation is doing. And folks, we hope you enjoyed this. We'll be right back right after these messages.
We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. Do you know, Edith? Those letters stand for exit drills in the home. Plan and practice an escape drill for your entire family and agree on a single meeting place where everyone will meet and stay together until the fire department arrives. Then be sure to practice your exit drill at least twice a year. And remember, if there's a fire, get out and stay out. It's your fire safe response. This message is brought to you by this podcaster and your local fire department.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car. Which, if you're buzzed, could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And that wraps another edition of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our special guest, Cindy L., for joining us to discuss the Firefighters Cancer Foundation. For more information, you can call them toll-free at 866-411-3323 or find them online at www.fffcancer.org. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our partners, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, Firetech, and Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a comment about a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at @cause_origin. And stay up to date with our blog at http://bit.ly/DalmatProdTV. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.